Rocking chair sessions. With Elisa Di Battista, Maria Teresa Barber.
Hello, everyone.
And welcome to RCS Rocking Chair Sessions, Volume 101, with artist Asair St. Val. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
We're super psyched.
Thanks so much for coming and sitting down with us.
Cross the Hill 101, right? Over the hill.
You crossed.
Amazing.
I don't think it crossed.
No, you know, cross it, you jump it. I don't know how it works. What's the saying? Over the hill. Anyhow.
Did you go over the hill?
There are no hills in Miami.
But we'll create some. They're there.
Imaginary world, right?
So now we have to go back in Asair's history, because the bakehouse once was his artistic home.
Ooh. Yeah.
Okay, how long ago was that?
And he still comes back very regularly.
I mean,
to meet with Joe.
Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't come see Joe?
And so tell us about your time at the bakehouse.
Okay, so it was 97.
Okay.
I was a student at Newell's Club of the Art, freshman. And then I met, I had a few friends, of course, at the big house, and we wanted to make art, and we didn't have a space. So we heard about the big house. We didn't want to use a studio at the Newell's Club of the Art. So Tal, Philip Casamajor, Jody Ching, and a few more artists. We came here and they had a space, and then we kind of shared it. And then we met with Rosie Gordon Wallace, who's like incubator. She fosters artists, and she really liked my work. And then she said, "You know what? I need to give you a studio. I want to give you a studio by yourself. I want you to create a body of work, and then give you a show after a month.
Wow.
Can you do that?"
That's amazing. I'm like,
yeah.
I can do that.
I can do anything. I just graduated.
Yeah.
I have all this energy.
I didn't graduate.
Oh, great.
Well, I graduated from high school, but not the college.
But really? You were still a student when it happened. So you
didn't... Yeah, freshman. I was still a student.
Wow.
That's
incredible.
So you decided, why even, when you're already showing and exhibiting and doing what you love?
Yeah, I started and...
Well, not doing
the work I was doing now. It was both figurative and
painting,
landscape,
right?
Painting of figurative reddish women. And she really loved them. And we had the show. She invited all her friends. Well, because she's a pharmacist and she has all this connection. She's a retired pharmacist. She had all these doctors and friends who she sells drugs to, of course. Not legal drugs, of course.
Legal. Everything's legal.
And a month later, we had a show. And she's just amazing. She had a live band outside.
Oh, that's lovely.
There was a stage, and she had food. She had poet, and we sold work. It was amazing.
Oh,
we almost sold the whole show.
Incredible.
Wow.
Almost.
Talking about living the dream.
Yeah.
And it's like your first show or your first big show.
It was like my first big solo show.
Oh, my God. You're so spoiled.
So you got discovered here at the big house.
Yeah, the
big house. It's such a great incubator for, like, artists.
Yeah. And then later I moved to that studio over there.
In the corner.
Mm-hmm.
First floor.
Yeah,
interior corner windows.
One of the largest
ones
with a window.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I shared it with another artist. Elizabeth. Yeah. Let's go.
For a period of time?
Mm-hmm. For maybe a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you decided you needed a even bigger space? Or?
No, we just moved to another studio space because she left, and then the rent was really high. So I'm like, okay, we'll move
you
to another.
Yeah.
She went to New York, and then I had another studio. You know, we have a dark room now? That little door?
Oh.
You pull. It's
oh, the
always,
spray room.
Yeah, the spray room.
The spray room.
That was my studio too.
Oh, nice.
I moved there.
You had three spaces, and the space you shared with all the classmates, and this one where you shared with one other person, and then the spray room.
Yeah.
A few people at the big house moved around.
Yeah,
it's funny.
We're gonna move around.
And each body of work that you develop in each space, I think, changes a little.
Uh huh.
As well.
And I met Joe, like, just how you guys met him. He's around, and we. He helped me, and we help each other, and we just stay friends. So I kept coming back. Hey, Joe, how's it going? How are you feeling?
Good boss.
Just amazing person,
sweet.
Humble and full of experience.
Mm-hmm.
He basically built this place.
Yeah.
He told me they were going to burn this place down. Oh, right? That's
no.
the story, right?
I have no idea.
There was a big house. They're going to burn it down. And then some amazing men came.
Yeah, activists put together. They were protesting,
yeah,
right?
They were protesting,
but they wanted to they wanted to level it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Joe was the first who came with the other gentleman. I don't remember his name. And asked him to, if he'd like to work here. And he had been there since then. Well, that was way before 97. That was
totally.
87 or something.
Yeah. Years ago. He's mm-hmm. part of the history here at the
Bay. Yeah, he is.
Incredible.
Oh, my goodness.
He told me how he built these walls.
Yeah, because there was, like, no AC.
Yeah.
There were no walls. They were, like, you know, everything was just, like, being built, you know, on the fly, kind of like
put together.
Yeah, there were. We've talked to artists who were telling us that there was no AC in here. You know,
oh, yeah,
and
then
the
AC.
And how
things
have changed.
Oh, really?
There was none.
Wow, those summers must have been warm.
They came later. Summer would be warm.
Toasty.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But it was part of it, you know. Come to work. You know, mm-hmm. come to chill.
Yeah.
Just work.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know what? There were AC upstairs.
Ooh.
There was always AC upstairs because it was small and confined, so you could put air conditioning. But the first floor, there wasn't.
Because it's so
because
open.
It's,
yeah.
Oh, that makes
so
sense.
They had to build the massive AC that goes all around. Yeah.
That makes perfect mm-hmm. sense. I'm curious. You wanted to ask a question, Maria? Okay, cool. These drawings that you mentioned first that were very figurative.
Paintings,
as opposed to more of the artwork that I've found on your website, more street. They feel like these very surreal landscapes. They're very like airy, and like, there's like upward movement. And so I'm curious, how did you go from those figurative pieces to more of the like these surreal kind of like landscapes with like these floating particles in them?
I think I was thinking about the figure, and then I thought, what if I could paint these figures, the essence, rather than the physical appearance?
The interior.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I started thinking about the interior of these people. Because I was really thinking about the nature of being Caribbean and raising with these women. I have a twin sister. Most
Stop.
Of my
That's
guardians
amazing.
Have been women.
Okay.
My father was never in the picture. He was, I just don't remember. So they say.
Strong female role models.
Right. Mm-hmm. I had strong female role model in my upbringing. My grandpa, I worked with him sometime, but it's like, he's my boss, like, do this, do this, do this. And I had an uncle who was a photographer, so I see him travel all the time. But when it comes to growing up, it was always women. So the figures came through, like, I remember this interesting story just working with women. I think women's sexuality here in the U.S. and the Caribbean is different. And I thought about like the experience that Paul Gauguin had when he went to Tahiti.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was among these very natural women that wasn't really concerned about physical appearance. They're just like, they are the land themselves,
mm-hmm.
their nature themselves. So clothing or putting clothes on, or it's just
makeup or the hair in a certain
or
way,
just walking barefoot or bare chest, or it's just natural. So I had that kind of experience in Haiti brought up because I was around 6, 7, 8 years old. And then my guardians, they're like, shower right there and like, come, I need you to wash my back, can't reach. Kind of like, but I'm 7, but they're naked. Well, they have like panties on, but they're like bare chested naked. I'm like, shocked, really? I mean, I'm a boy, I'm still attracted to them because I'm a kid. So I remember, I'm like,
don't look, scrubbing your back.
What am I doing?
Being respectful.
Yeah, so I think very much the painting, those nude paintings, came from that experience. I wanted to show that natural lifestyle when it comes to like sexuality, sensuality, and comfortability, nature. And I was going to compare it to here, and here become like a taboo. Oh my God. When I came here,
mm-hmm.
like a taboo. Oh no, you can't see me naked. But then the beach is okay, but.
Yeah, but I feel like even like in Europe, if you would go to a sauna, I mean, you would always be like nude. You would have maybe a towel on. But in the States, it's always like you have to kind of like cover yourself, or on the beach as well. Like in Europe, there is like way more like, you know, without a top, topless. Is that
what
you
said? And it's okay.
And it's like, okay, you know, but here it's like breasts are very sexualized in the States, I feel. And it's not even, it's just sexualized, you know, it's not, I don't know.
It's just different. When it's different, yeah. When did you get here from Haiti? When did you arrive?
Oh, 88, going to 89.
Oh, fine. Yeah.
March 11, 1988, like moving into...
So you were young.
Yeah. That's cool.
So you went to high school here?
Mm-hmm. First year middle school. Mm-hmm. Last year middle school. Eighth
grade,
moving to high school, and then ninth, till university.
Mm-hmm. How was Miami back then, do you feel, in terms of, like, the art scene so early?
Oh, definitely big time. We're talking about like 20 years, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was so much better. Even sales was better.
I mean, I hear crazy stories.
The market was better.
Yeah,
I hear crazy stories about like the Art Center, Lincoln Road scene in the 80s, 90s.
Yeah, Miami Beach, Lincoln Road.
And it was artists and kind of sketchy, but lots of artists, you know, making it happen.
Yeah, I had a show and it was like, I mean, I'm just coming. It was like almost sold out. Well, it all has to do with who's...
representing
your audience, but it was, if I made it work, I would sell it.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it was better because fresh and new, you know what I mean? Now it's just saturated.
I mean, it's growing. I don't feel like it's reached full saturation, but it's definitely, there's a lot of people gravitating towards the newness, and so there are more bodies and more people and similar fields, but I think that's kind of fun too.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
In a bit.
I miss that freshness though.
I think you'd have to pick another city for that. Exactly. I think our time of freshness is when it's more like sustaining. remaining and sustaining. So these interior... or representations of interior forms that you started making, how did you visualize that? Because I feel like it looks like, I feel like I recognize the place, but I don't. It kind of has like a nostalgic quality to it.
So I guess the word would be nostalgic, but dreamy and not thinking.
Okay.
Yeah, so I approached them by not thinking about what I'm doing. But if you notice in the paintings,
yes,
they are limbs and legs, so it's there,
like pieces still trying to ground you,
right? There's pieces of them still there, like physical leg or arm, to suggest that this is a person or an organism or a thing or
definitely
physical.
Feels like organism because the form itself is kind of so organic. It's like you're like, is it an amoeba, is it like a cell, what is this kind of like natural form?
But these are also your three dimensional pieces. Are you talking?
No,
you're still talking about the paintings. The more like surreal because we were talking.
Yes. How did you jump from those paintings eventually to girl? I'm so glad.
Because I was like, you were like describing it, and I was like, are we already talking about the 3D sculptures? Because for me, they are becoming even more like these.
Totally. But you gotta go with the paintings first.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. Cool. We could talk about that when we mentioned.
It was interesting because in the last show that I saw, that was in the design district, you had the paintings, and then next to it, the sculpture, which is like an inflatable sculpture, inflatable form that you that has like marks on the outside. That is like
a photograph,
or it looks like almost it could be a painting, right?
Well, it is.
And then it is a painting.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have objects with it, and it becomes more rooted in like reality through the objects that are hanging from it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like going back from the surreal world back into the real world again, because there is like...
But it's still pretty surreal to look at.
It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, good
That's
point.
Sorry, I'm talking so much.
Yeah, it's it's living in the spiritual world. I call it spiritual rather than
surreal.
Surreal.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I like those phrases. It makes me think about the islands, spirituality.
Yeah, I call it the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
Rather mm-hmm. than surrealism, and then the physical realm. Mm-hmm. So this object ties it in. Ties those two worlds together mm-hmm. because then you could recognize them. Mm-hmm. Then other stuff, you really can't recognize them. You can only make reference to like interesting or things from the ocean, sea creatures, shells. Most people do. Mm-hmm. But when they're created, I'm thinking about outside this mm-hmm. physical world or within. The cool. spiritual world.
It's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. The string, I feel, is a prominent, funny enough, line that I saw from the paintings to actually the structures themselves, because like there, a few of the paintings have like the string holding it down, like holding onto this, like the, as you mentioned, the spiritual world to reality, and then you have this inflatable three-dimensional balloon that's ginormous, like huge, and it's being held down by these strings from like the obviously spiritual levitational world where the balloon will fly away if you don't hold it down with the string. What does that string mean to you?
Are you talking about the installation or the painting?
Both, like the meaning, and well, obviously the installation when you have to have the string attached uh-huh. or to float away, but the meaning of the one in the painting.
The one in the painting are done for two or three reasons. I'll deal with two of them. So one is to create a movement, mm-hmm. a force, a pull, push-pull. Mm-hmm. Second is to create a conversation between two worlds or two groups of people. And that would be the scientific world from one perspective and the scientific world from a different perspective. When I say that, if a European does, the scientific world, unfortunately, is kind of like a society, right? And there's a group of people that controls it. If you come up with an abstract and they disagree with it, they could choose not to publish you if they don't like it. Mm-hmm. They could choose not to publish you. Mm-hmm. And that depends on who you are.
Totally.
For instance, there was a scientist named T. Owens Moore. Actually, he's a surgeon. And he wrote a book on dispelling the myth of melanin. Mm. He was African American. He is African American. And they discount his work as pseudoscience because he's African American, because they feel he's being somewhat prejudiced or biased. Mm-hmm. Now, if that study was done by a European or someone or another scientist, they would say, okay, you know, let's look at it. So this push and pull, the string is in the painting. It's to create that tension between these two worlds. Mm-hmm.
Mm, okay. But it's also like you said, that the tension between a spiritual realm, right? And the...
No.
Or not.
The strings are not dealing with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The spiritual world, it's a creation of the
painting.
Of the painting. Mm-hmm.
It's like an umbilical cord almost. It's just like mm-hmm. latching on to this thing. Am I know?
In the sculpture?
In the painting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The creation is the spiritual and the physical world. Mm-hmm. What's happening within the landscape of the painting is the reality with the scientific world. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With how that balances out. Mm-hmm. How do you feel that, I guess, I think it's so different when you come from somewhere else and your perspective, like you mentioned, your like the American perspective versus like coming from somewhere else. And I think it enriches it. You know, it makes it more diverse and it gives you a wider global lens. How do you feel that growing up in Haiti has given you that larger global lens in creating your paintings now?
I don't know if it did other than it socially, because I grew up very little. I think what I have is a social upbringing, a home.
That's a lot.
Oh, I guess so.
Yeah.
Because I was little. I mean, wasn't into the politics. I wasn't into, I don't know. I feel like there's something I miss, but I gain the basis, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I answer that properly, because I feel like I don't.
Was there anything you were attracted to, like in terms of like colors or like sculptural things, or?
I guess culturally, yes, because some people have said that, and I would agree. The paintings are very bright,
mm-hmm.
and the Caribbeans have no issue with like
color,
bright colors. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're just
You're not scared of it.
Yeah, we're not scared of it. We're not using black to express anything. We could express something sad, and it's white. You know, we like fauvism, straight up from the tube.
Mm-hmm.
So although I do enjoy mixing, creating
mm-hmm.
new colors, but I think somehow that bright color. Yeah. Tropical essence.
It's like in your blood.
It's in my blood. Yeah,
you're used to it.
What other influences would you say inspired you over the years? Was it like in school, or was it more like,
I don't know, different artists? If you mentioned the photographer, your uncle, and you know, was there anybody who like gave you projects at home besides your grandfather telling you to do this or do that?
No, I was very much alone, just doing. Oh, you know what? I remember a story, but it was like more like school story.
Okay.
It's interesting. It's just, I remember a story. When I was in class, it must have been like 5th, 6th grade, because I was like in 7th, 8th grade here.
Mm-hmm.
You were still in Haiti?
Yeah, I was still in Haiti then, this story. Still in Haiti. So I'm in class, and I'm drawing, and the teacher is teaching math or French, if I recall.
Oh, my goodness.
And she found me drawing.
You're on task.
I could say shit on this, right?
Yes.
Okay. Totally.
Thank God.
You can say whatever.
So, she pulled me to the class in front and physically disciplined me in front of the student.
Oh,
it's okay.
God.
It's accepted. You just can't cut the child.
Well, that's a good thing, yeah.
You could discipline, but you can't discipline to a point where your blood comes out.
Wow.
Well, so blood came out. Maybe she cut me right here. So maybe she missed and hit me like on a sensitive soft skin and didn't get my hand. It's supposed to be in the hand. Don't get to the skin.
Oh my
blood came
goodness.
Out. And then
see.
Yeah, and then I mean, I don't think she noticed, but that's a blood, so I went home and told my parents. And my parents came and reprimanded to the school, and she got very upset at me for, you know, speaking up. I was supposed to, like, shut up, you know what I mean?
I mean, that's what a good, yeah.
And she got very upset, and then she reprimanded me. And she told me, well, I heard you going to the U.S. We'll see if you become an artist. You know, that stay with me. I don't know if that answers your question.
It totally answers my question. Because it's like sometimes people can, you know, support you in a way that they would give you art supplies or they show you techniques. But sometimes people also, quote unquote, support you who are like these adversary
agents. With you, with the teacher that told you, you suck. This is not good. You can't be an artist. I remember.
Yeah.
That stay with you.
Yeah.
We were talking about.
I was like, I had this experience where I was also like physically reprimanded in school, and in Austria that was okay too, right?
Uh-huh.
But this one teacher ripped my drawing apart of a cat in front of the class, you know?
That's horrible.
It was like, that's why I think even until I was 30, I would never have thought of myself as an artist.
Yeah,
I had other people. They had to tell me over and over and over when I was in California that you're actually, that I'm an artist, and I would shake my head and I'm like, are you crazy? I'm not an artist.
Wow.
Because
how old
it
were
was
you?
Like, when
did that happen? When she tell you?
I was probably 8.
Oh my God.
I was very, very little, but I remember that I started to cry. I ran into the bathroom to hide, and she would not get me out of the bathroom anymore. Like, she said, you have to come out of the bathroom. Yep. And I would refuse. Wow. I would refuse. And so, you're a teacher. You know what I'm talking about. So then,
Elisa. I've had that experience with teachers myself, or at least a teacher.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, but I was in college when she broke me. And then I just, like, resuscitated like a phoenix. But the point is that it's like, when you have students that are talented, but they're being lazy, you push them and you're like, you know, you could do better than that. Try a little bit longer. You're not done yet. Push yourself a little bit more. You know, you're capable of more. But when you have that student that's just like struggling and they're like, this is horrible. I can't do this. I mean, you just have to tell them the truth. Like, I started with stick figures. You learn, you'll get better. You just have to keep on going and you inspire them to improve. You don't tear up their pieces in front of them to make them cry. That's really
extreme. But it is so interesting for me, and it's still like this riddle for me. And I think the teacher passed away already, but I'm still in touch with a really good friend who was in
your
class
teacher
with me.
Here? I think you should find her. I think you should find her.
Oh,
and you should show
God.
Her your artwork and be like, yes, I did become an artist. Thank you very much.
She was young.
You should find her. I'm telling you, she's probably still around.
Not interesting. I'm really not interested.
Send her a painting.
It would take too much work. I could make 20 paintings trying to find her.
You think so? Facebook? Really? I'm sure she remembers you.
Wow.
I wonder.
Yeah.
I can't believe that. I'm still like trying to figure out what would have gone to her, through her mind, yeah. You know, to do that. You know, to kind of like get like that upset about you drawing. Like,
I think some teacher, I mean, I've caught students doing like math or reading homework, and I'm like, I'm loving that you're doing your homework, but it's still art time, so finish what you have to do later. But I'm liking that you're doing your homework when you're supposed to, but just not right now. So I've had students, actually when I taught high school, I haven't taught high school in a while, but the student was like, Miss, my teacher caught me doing art in math class. And I'm like, oh my God. Apologize, tell them you won't do it again. I'm glad you were drawing, but don't do it during math because then you're gonna get in trouble. So I understand. It just, you know, you do what you want when you want sometimes.
But it's still like, for me, incredible that you remember those situations, you know, and they stay with you.
What was
and that's
it?
Like,
what did you draw? You blanked it out.
Blank? I don't know.
It's
what
just
I was
more
drawing,
the situation
but I knew
than the beating.
I was always drawing.
Oh, God.
When I'm bored,
with, like,
I draw.
Pencil.
When I'm alone, I draw. If I don't have a pencil, I draw on the floor, on the dirt.
Do you have sketchbooks or just, like, whatever material you could find? Receipts, napkins?
Over there, yeah, whatever. Even on the floor. Like, with a stick.
Like, doodle with a stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With a stick. And mix, and I'm, like, into it.
Let's talk about your performance now, because I feel like your performance has, it has a rawness to it in itself, but it also has like a very drawing-like quality, but with the body. When did you decide to start doing the drawings? Like, I saw the ones with the feet, and it was like, was that not on your website? There was like paper laid out, and then it was like imprints of like people walking, and it looked like a painting almost.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know about that.
I looked on his website. He has video. He has performance. He has you dabble.
That was a public performance I did.
When did you decide to go outside from painting and drawing and start to do that? Exploring
this
performance.
This was an experiment I was doing because I danced casino.
Okay.
And I learned casino from a teacher a Cuban teacher. Dancer mm-hmm. that lived in Japan for 13 years.
Wow, okay.
So his method of teaching is very different,
totally.
Very methodical. And it's so methodical that it's visual.
Wow.
He developed a visual step diagram and how to move your feet when you're dancing, when you're doing a welter, or when you're doing a move,
goodness.
So I
apply, we're going to have to come to your classes if you
I
teach.
I apply that technique into a performance where I had put coffee on the floor on a square, and then we give them gel medium on the coffee with some water.
Mm-hmm.
And then forget what's happening. Now let's dance on the coffee. And when they finish, the goal was to see their foot pattern.
Yeah, especially when they do like
happening.
The ruedas and stuff.
And what,
oh, that's so
what
fun.
it was a rueda, actually
nice.
A circle. Rueda
yes.
means a circle, a wheel.
Uh-huh.
When you're dancing casino, in your mind, you're creating a circle in your mind, whether you go this way, that way, and it looks like a mandala, but a circular mandala. So, rueda.
Cool.
And fine. Even when you're dancing in two partner, you're dancing within a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of connection with my concept when I was painting, my philosophy, melanin, neuromelanin, brain, the dot, the center. It's always a wheel, the number 8. Because the song plays an 8-beat per major, like
8/16 or something. Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's fun.
And then the diagram was an 8,
was like an infinity
mm-hmm. octagon.
Okay.
The whole step is created on an octagon, so you're stepping an octagon, which is 8, which is reference to the music. I was like, I'm glad he was my teacher, because now I understand the dance.
In a visual, mm-hmm.
visual way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I forgot you do dance. I see your feet pop up.
Because dance is also a really important part of your practice, right? Or it's just like of you as a person.
I think of your life. I think there's a disconnect that has to happen when you're dancing and you're like an outer body consciousness, but you're very much in your body. It's kind of strange. You have to be able to like let go, but be aware at the mm-hmm. same time. Dancing salsa is super hard. I tried it for one semester. It was not my thing. I might have to ask you for tips, but mm-hmm. it's just like there's this like rhythm, a very like, it's kind of like meditative.
It's kind of like the painting.
Yeah.
You're in the spiritual world and you're in the physical at the same time.
Yeah.
Dancing, you have to let go, especially for women.
The mental, the spiritual, yes.
Yeah,
for
especially
women.
For women. Oh. You have to let go, be led.
Yeah.
At the same time, you have to remember
your feet
pattern.
Such a struggle.
And your movement pattern and your response, because you're responding to your
totally.
Partner.
Yeah.
You have to remember to respond to him well and have fun within the whole thing.
I know.
And that's like the in between.
But it's
like the string or the feet, and then the spiritual is like the blob in your mind.
I feel like there's also something about the dancing, because you have like, I mean, I did casino is the name of the dance.
Yeah, some casino.
Like in Austria, you dance waltz, you dance tango, you dance foxtrot, but not, you know, it's like different. But there is something about this very controlled pattern that you then flow into, and you have so much freedom in that patterning.
Yes.
That is really interesting.
What do you have?
Because
casino.
There are so many rules. Like there's a, alone the tension that you have to have between the partners, you know, is necessary for you to be able to be guided. Because if there's no tension, then, you know, there's not like this frame you can't follow.
You
because if there's not a stability, you
mm-hmm,
can't be
mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
you know.
You have to create a tension, but you can't be too tense.
No. You have to be.
You can't be non-existent, because mm-hmm. you have this with partners that feel like they're not there
mm-hmm.
because there is no tension.
Mechanical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're mechanical.
They're thinking.
They're
I know.
Thinking too much, or they're not feeling you enough.
Mm-hmm.
They're still not there. They're not present.
To respond.
And some are so present it's too much,
mm-hmm.
then you get tired, like, because
mm-hmm.
you have to, like,
you have to fight them
all.
Yeah,
you have to
right?
fight because it's too present.
Yeah.
Funny. It's really interesting.
How did you go from the 2D into the, what made you think, like, I have to inflate these forms? Like, how, why go sculptural, why go 3D? Like, when did that opportunity happen and you're, like, jumping into it?
It kind of jumped out of the canvas almost, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the idea. I wanted to jump out of a canvas and use the Miami landscape, Miami, as the backdrop. So to do that, I had to paint the painting as is and then digitally remove it from the landscape. Then create a three-dimensional 3D image picture. Then I found a company in China
cool.
that can create these polyethylene sculptures, high definition,
cool.
and mail it back to me and then inflate it. And then now the backdrop and then the environment
is the city.
And the bed becomes this new landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sound and the aromas and the taste and the food and the
mm-hmm.
and now moving into performance.
Oh my God, with these pieces?
No, well, an additional component.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the idea of the bed and the people actually laying down enter? Is that still like a part of the people being like physically present, but still like letting themselves kind of sort of relax to the point of like being in a meditative state?
That.
Okay.
It was a way to stop the viewer.
Stillness.
Or the audience. Mm-hmm. Stilt.
Yeah.
And contemplate and give them a chance to just be, you know?
Present.
Because sometimes when you're in a gallery, you're watching or you're
just
doing something,
by.
You just... Mm-hmm. I wanted to really, really, really stop and feet mm-hmm. up and like no shoes and rest and then...
Have the sound.
Yeah, well, it's not a sound, so...
Or is it just a blocking out of sound? Is it just like headphones to help you? Like, do they
That's
put on...
That's a good idea, but no.
Okay.
But it is a good idea.
Because it changes the experience. And even whatever spot you lay on... will change the experience in terms of what you're viewing and the time of day and the things that are happening around it. So it's never the same.
Yeah.
That's quite unique as well.
They're not listening to nothing. They are listening to something, but it's nothing. Just like this image of the organism flowing.
Okay.
Floating. We don't know what it is, but it's something.
Okay.
So they're listening to something, but it's not really something they can relate to or connect to in the physical world or story.
So it's not instrumental, it's not meditative, it's not musical notes, it's just like, okay.
It's not. It was actually me speaking between midnight and 1 o'clock, 60 minutes talking. Well, I'm in a state of sleep, so I'm falling asleep. Mm-hmm. But I'm speaking about whatever comes, and sometimes it's stuff I've read, sometimes it's stuff I've heard for the day, or what's happening in the room, mm-hmm. and then I just keep it flow, and a few, sometimes I may fall asleep, because I'm in a state of sleep, and then I'll wake up, I'm like, shoot, I still have like 20 minutes, 20 minutes, what is 20 minutes? Let's take a little bit. Ah, when she was 20, she was there. What is it to be there?
Mm.
Why can't I be and not there? Kind of so like that, and I just did it. But
it's free association, kind of, right? It's mm-hmm. like this, when you're on a, how is it called? When you have a walk and you just let the walk guide you, what's the derive? Derive? That's like a practice.
You're using one of your psychological words on me right now.
No. It's an artistic word. It's like when artists just, when you were just the experience of like, you just walk through a city.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
But you're not going anywhere.
You're just going. And that's kind of like how
I see you with your talking. You know, you're basically talking mm-hmm. and you're going from one spot to the other, but it's not necessarily, you don't have a goal or anything.
It's like, and it's more than spontaneous because it's in four languages.
Wow.
So at one stop, I would like, probably parler bagay sa encore, me changer. I move into like a Creole, mais je ne veux pas, pourquoi pas? And then I'll just move into like a French, but it's still relating to something. So you really can't really understand, like mm-hmm. connect any story.
Mm-hmm. Going from one through the other.
Or Spanish.
But it's still very much about your identity, even if it is. I mean, Freud would just have a blast with you right
what
now.
What you dream
know? It's kind of like, because it's like, what Freud would do, or not just Freud, but also other, you know, people with the pendulum, or so put you in a state of trance,
uh-huh.
and then what comes out is actually what comes out of your subconscious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that is like, so it's in a way, it's like the less you... control what comes out, the more interesting it is actually to look at it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But it's also like about your identity, like about all these languages that you think in or deal with. It's like,
yeah.
It's very interesting.
I would repeat that question then. What language do you dream in?
I dreamt in Spanish the other day, but that's because I've been practicing Spanish every day.
And you were in Cuba. You were in
and
Cuba.
And then I was in Cuba.
You were in Cuba. Fine, let's talk about that. I saw the pictures.
You were
on
in
Facebook.
Cuba for 2 weeks.
Yeah,
so you were surrounded by Spanish, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got an access grant a couple days ago.
Awesome.
From the,
Miami Cultural History. Awesome.
To go somewhere, and I wanted to go back to Cuba to work with... this gentleman named Tamayo Israel, who's, he's a superstar in his, in Cuba and also the rest of the world, except here, because he doesn't travel here. And right now, when I went there, he was on his way to Canada for a month. So we worked for a little bit on a mule.
Fun.
And then, of course, the same, my same process was to create a mule within 2 weeks.
It's large.
And install it. I actually did it in 1 week.
Oh my God!
By the eighth day, I was done. And I had to think about what it is to be in Santiago.
Mm-hmm.
I also embedded into the Santiago culture. It's very, very, very cultural there in terms of the arts, Santiago. That's what the mule was about, like thinking about Santiago. Having been there and also returning.
Mm-hmm. Such a difference I feel sometimes when you go back to a place.
So energy. It's hard to describe the work because it's not really here, but
it's also fresh.
And then I think the most beautiful thing that happened is then we collaborate with a few other artists and galleries that wanted to find a place for the mule, but then I would donate it to a public institution.
That's
not
great.
A private, but a public institution.
Definitely.
Because they have a project over there where that's Tamayo have a project where he invite artists from different part of the world, different part of Europe, the US, everywhere. They get together and they create mule in public places for the people within the time, and I think it's about a month.
Okay.
Yeah. So
and here you are doing it in 8 days.
My goal was to do it in 2 weeks, but then it just happened. I finished in a week.
Wow.
Where was I?
Did they donate to a public institution?
Yeah, we went to an institution, the Hospital Provincial. Laura, something like that it's
nice.
Called, and it's actually a heart surgery, specialized in heart surgery.
Lovely.
Hospital. So we donate it and we install it same day,
nice.
Documented.
So what did you paint it on?
I actually painted it on a tarp.
I was about to say it was like greenish and then it had like these colors on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a green tarp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very fragile, and I kind of like it that way, that it's ephemeral, you know? Mm-hmm. If you scratch it, it could come off.
Oh, no. I hope it doesn't.
Our goal now is to go back to Cuba and suspend a glass over it so people don't have access to it.
Oh, smart. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or plexi might be accessible as well.
Plexiglass.
Yeah, plexi.
How big is it?
Oh, it's 6 feet, 6 feet high. 3 feet wide.
It's large.
Actually, it's bigger than that.
It looks like
It's different, different dimension. The longest size, because it's an amorphous form.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like an angle.
Oh,
it's
okay.
A different angle, so. Mm-hmm.
It looked pretty large. I mean, you stood next to it, and I think it looked like at least 6x8, 6x6.
Yeah,
it looks pretty large.
It's huge, and I painted it on a top that was 16x12.
Oh, wow. But then you cut out.
Then I cut
the
out,
form.
And I used the entire length. The height was. It was great. We found a place
really
for it,
experience.
And it's beautiful. And we documented it.
That's lovely.
That's incredible. And now you're going to Belize soon.
Yeah, I'm going to Belize with the Diaspora Vibe Gallery.
Nice.
Which is Rosie's gallery.
Which is Rosie's. Gallery, Diaspora Vibe Cultural Art Incubator.
Nice.
So our goal is to go there and create and organize a few workshops on diaspora art artists, and we'll have a show too, so I have to bring work for an exhibition.
That's great. Mm-hmm.
And then we'll just talk about all the ideas of the creativity, how can you use your space
different
in a place such as the Caribbean, what do artists need? What type of support would they need? Yeah.
And Rosie is from Belize, right?
No. Rosie is from Jamaica.
From Jamaica,
she's Jamaican.
Yes. Adrian is from Belize. And Amanda here is also from Belize.
Yeah. Oh, really, Amanda?
How often have you been in Belize?
I haven't been.
It's first
my first time.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool. Wow. That's great. I love going to new places. I think there's always like an energy of like
discovery. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And I feel like when you travel as an artist, it's always you come back transformed and something shifts. And for me,
always,
it's like,
I mean, you get inspired. Totally.
It's just like traveling is so important for artists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's so important.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know, okay, Maria gave me this hand signal that we're running out of time, but I'm going to ask you two questions at least before we leave, and then she'll ask you the last one. I'm curious to know, since you are a twin, do you communicate with your sister?
It was stronger when we were little.
Okay.
And I think as you reach puberty, which is the puberty, it's the detached started. But I remember a point where we could communicate. I know where she is. I know what's happening. If something happened to her, I know.
Neat. That's amazing. And then eventually, like, you're an artist. What is she?
She's a linguist.
Okay.
She's like very talented with languages. And she speaks it like it's her own language.
Well,
it's,
I mean, like obviously three already: French, Haitian, and then like English.
Right.
Then what are the other ones? Maybe Spanish from Miami.
Spanish too. She's Spanish. And then I think she's doing Portuguese now.
Fine. Well, it's close to Spanish, so that makes
sense.
Yeah,
she's really, really good with languages.
Wow. Still something and that requires creativity.
She sings too.
Oh, so she's music, the other side of the art and music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
I was curious because you said twin, and I was like, oh, that's so neat.
Do you have any twin?
I don't, but it's always a secret wish, you know? Like
she has a sister that she has the same name as her.
We're so not going to go into this.
Because he wanted to be twins.
It's like her father wanted her to be twins. Identical.
No
way. Anyhow, now's the time, since it's almost Maria's turn. Is there, other than your trip to Belize, any projects you're working on that you're excited about? Any openings you'd like to share with us and our listeners that might be coming forth this year that you want to open up and talk?
I think other than Belize, that's what I have now. I just had like
you just did
two
Cuba.
Shows.
I mean, yeah, back to back.
Back to back at Broward College.
Is that still
had, like almost a solo. No, that was ended.
Oh, that's too bad.
And another one, the one you came with, too. I can't think. I'm so bad at this.
It's like, okay. We'll connect your website to ours, and then hopefully people can look you up and find out.
Very
more.
Last question. You've been sitting in a magical rocking chair.
Yes, and I've been rocking it.
It grants you three wishes.
Three wishes?
You can wish for anything and everything, but you have to say it out loud for it to come true.
For it to come true?
Those are the rules of the rocking chair.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
So what are your three wishes? That's not my rules.
It's a
I wish I could die and come back. Then I would know what death is.
That's an interesting wish. Okay.
Yeah.
I died once in a psychodrama. I mean, in like a role play. It was awesome. I was floating in the cosmos, and I was just like part of like everything. I
you
can
really
highly
died?
Recommend it. In a psychodrama, you know, you kind of like, you're not supposed to do that because then.
I did in a dream and it was horrible, but we won't discuss that right now.
I loved that. So, but yeah, that's a really good wish. Okay. What's your second wish?
I wish I could, I don't know, have a rum right now?
No, this is water, sadly.
I have gin, I can make that
this
happen.
Okay.
Gin?
We'll make that wish happen once the session's over. Check.
Wish number three.
Wish number three.
Death, rum, and
travel the world.
Yay! That was fun, and luckily you're doing that. You're welcome. You're going to and many,
like
many
the whole
other places.
World, not just like,
every single country.
Yeah,
like
every
that would be fun.
That would be so fun.
We have
so
to send us there around the world.
I want to go everywhere. I want to see
it'll
how
happen.
People live, how they live their life, what they eat.
I think it'll
how
happen.
How they hate, how they love, all the nuances, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It'll be fun. Those little things will happen for you, I'm sure. Sarah, thank you for coming to sit down with us.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you for having me, rocking chair.
Yes. Thank you, Maria.
And thank you to our listeners.
Yes, for sticking around. And we'll catch you next time.
We're going to be back next week.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye, guys.
Bye.